You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeslein. I'm really excited to be with you for the next hour. We've got a couple good guests who are going to join us a little bit later. We're going to talk with Leslie George from the Minnesota DNR. She's in fisheries. We'll talk about that new muskie plan that the agency unveiled here a couple weeks ago. Muskie opener next weekend already, June 6th. So good timing to talk to Leslie. We also got a young guy, Seth Owen. Seth works for Pheasants Forever. He's a big-time photographer on the side. A fine young man. I've never been on the show before. Looking forward to chatting with him. We will kick off the show as usual with Tim Lesmeister. Tim, welcome and good to see you. Got some heat rolled through the region here this week, maybe warming up the shallows and activating the fishing, huh?
Yeah, and you mentioned that the muskie opener is happening, and I always tell people muskie fishing doesn't get good until October. But hey, go out and have some fun, throw some big baits. You'll catch some big northern pike. They're very active right now. The pike fishing's been very good. And you'll get some big bass, too, on those big musky baits. I don't know why they like hitting them, but, you know, most guys go out there with topwaters. They go out with those jerk baits that, you know, the Suics, and they just, you know, run basically 6-8 inches below the surface. And they catch a lot of big bass. They catch a lot of big northerns. But the muskellunge this time of year, that they're not quite ready yet. They won't be very active until about the middle of October.
And with electronics now, forward-facing sonar, those fish will see a lot of lures. They're going to see a lot of pressure, even if they're not active, even if they're not biting. I've talked to some musky guys who tell me that they've seen the fish. They're starting to react. You know, they feel that FFS pulse, and they kind of back off, and they move on. So we'll see if we're indeed educating the muskies. But I guarantee you that the fish are going to see a lot of lures, Tim. They're going to see a lot of anglers pursuing them.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's one thing about big northern pike and big muskellunge is that they like being out suspended in open water where they get right above the thermocline, and that's just the right temperature for them. And they probably sneak into the shallows. Muskies feed at night quite a lot. We used to get a lot of huge muskies at night. And so what you'll find is that these guys go out there with the forward-facing sonars. They're picking up these big suspended muskies, and they know they're muskellunge on a forward-facing sonar on these live scopes. So you can see that these are big northern pike, big muskellunge out there suspended. And so, you know, you can basically target those fish. You don't always get them to bite. Most of them aren't actively feeding right now. But every once in a while, they'll get one to grab a bait.
Well, good luck to the muskie anglers next weekend. We'll probably talk muskies a little bit more next week. We should jump into some headlines. Tim, the big one, we've got the Minnesota DNR is finally launching its electronic licensing system update. This is a big deal, going to be an app. You're going to be able to do this on your phone. I think there's going to be different types of licenses available. I think maybe, so the official kickoff date is June 9th, which is a Tuesday. I think maybe a bigger story here, we had it, I made sure we got it in the subhead, but otherwise we kind of had the information at the bottom of the story, and I'm not seeing anybody else report this, but they're going to completely pause license sales for a week while they transition from the legacy system that we're using now to the new system. So from roughly June 2nd to June 9th, you won't be able to buy a license. If you go fishing, the DNR is saying you don't need a license. If you go fishing during that period, you're not going to have to buy a license.
I think it was a great idea they waited till this particular time period to do this, because just about every angler in the state of Minnesota that is active, really gets out there a lot, is already going to have their license. They've already bought them, and so they're not going to actually lose too many people. They're not going to see a whole bunch of people go, oh my gosh, now I get to go out and fish without a license, and so I'm going to not buy one and then get out there and fish without one. It's not going to happen. I think it was perfect timing, and it's not going to make much of a difference.
Yeah, it's a month after opener. That's when the bulk of licenses get sold. It's after Memorial Day. A lot of licenses get sold, you know, for that weekend. That's kind of a kickoff for a lot of folks. And it's well before hunting season, so no one's buying their hunting tags yet. That said, Tim, I still think there'll be a few people like, wow, hey, there's a week I don't have to buy a license. I can go fishing. I bet we'll see a little pulse of anglers getting out there and taking advantage of it.
I hope so, because if they go out there and fish without a license and get hooked on fishing, then they're going to probably then buy a license. I think the DNR should start promoting this. Hey, get out there and fish without a license. Have some fun.
Try fishing for free for a week. You're right.
Sure,
yeah.
Test the waters. Why not?
Might as well leverage it a little bit. You bet.
Heck yeah.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Driesline and Tim Lesmeister are kicking off this week's broadcast. Another story, Tim. We had a big rescue up in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. We had three young guys, 18 and 19-year-olds, got caught in some pretty nasty wind. I tell you, that's something I worry about whenever I'm in the Boundary Waters, Sim, is hitting some really bad wind and some really bad waves. These guys, their canoe went down. Most emergency personnel in mid-May when this happened were occupied with fires. And so, you know, an emergency call went out. These guys were lucky they grabbed a bag that had a cell phone in it. So they were lucky they were able to, contact emergency sources and let them know that, hey, we're in trouble here. The only person who was kind of available was a conservation officer. He got out and rescued these guys.
It was interesting because these guys went down in Jackfish Bay on Basswood Lake, which is quite a ways into Basswood Lake. So this conservation officer all by himself, because the rest of his crews are out fighting fires because there are burns going everywhere, right? So he grabbed a 16-foot Alaskan, and it had a 75-horsepower motor on it, which is not a light motor. It's a tiller motor.
Yeah.
And he had to wheel portage that thing across Fall Lake and then Newton Lake to get into Basswood. I've done this many times. This guy did this by himself. I'm saying, wow, dude, you are one strong guy and obviously motivated. So he got into the Basswood Lake with this boat and motor, motored up to where these guys were, and realized they had no shoes. They had no matches. They didn't put any waterproof matches in their pockets. That's where I always carried them. I never went into the Boundary Waters without a
good bunch advice.
Of, you know, water, one of those little waterproof containers with a bunch of those Strike Anywhere matches. Always had them. And they had none of those. And so he piled these guys into that boat, and they took off and made the round trip. I'm sure he was glad he had them when he was going out, but even then, barefooted? Oh, my gosh.
It sounds like all three of these guys were on a swim team, which probably helped save their lives because it was cold water. They were able to swim to shore fairly quickly. Anthony Bermel is the name of the conservation officer who made the trip 30 miles one way. This is big water, right, Tim? I mean, you can see how you would capsize potentially in high winds on a lake like this.
Well, you know, canoes are only a few feet wide. Well, actually, about 2 feet wide. So you get into those three-foot waves. That's all you need is 3 foot waves, and Basswood's a huge lake. And if you get caught in a swell, in the middle of the swell, sideways, you know, parallel with that swell, you're going over. You're turning over. There's nothing you can do about it. So you always got to be cutting it either 90 or 45 into that wave, or you're going to flip over. And that's what these guys did. And there were three of them in the canoe. So
with a lot of gear, presumably.
They had their life jackets on. They were good swimmers. They got to shore. They didn't have any extra clothing and no fire. Here's what you need if you're going to survive, and that's fire and that's water. Everything else is you don't care about. You know, shelter you can build. Food, you don't need it. You got fat reserves. But you need water, which you got plenty of that in the Boundary Waters, and you need fire. So always, always, always carry waterproof matches or a waterproof container with some Strike Anywhere matches, and you'll survive.
All right, Tim, you'll stick around, circle back at the end of the show?
Absolutely.
He's Tim Lesmeister. I'm Rob Driesline. More of the broadcast after these messages.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory length enforcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken's Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Zreisland with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you like the discussion here, please check us out online at outdoornews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our digital or print versions that way. I want to talk now about the new muskie plan that is in place. Muskellunge are a very popular sport fish here in Minnesota. The muskie opener is not too far away next weekend, June 6th. And here to discuss the new plan, the new muskie plan that we've got, is Leslie George, the Northeast Regional Fisheries Manager. She's out of Grand Rapids. Leslie, thanks a lot for carving out some time to chat with me here today.
Thank you for the time, Rob, and thank you for the invitation to talk about this effort.
Yeah, we've got muskie fishing officially opening next Saturday, June 6th. And at the past couple of DNR roundtables, part of the discussion was, you know, we haven't had a new muskie plan in a while. And so last year, the state got rolling on it, and you were kind of the point person. Is that correct? Tell me a little bit, I guess, about the history, the background of previous muskie plans here in Minnesota. And why is a plan necessary for a fish? I mean, can't fish just take care of themselves?
Yeah, thanks again for the opportunity to talk about this. Our previous long-range plan for muskies actually expired a couple years ago. That plan was really focused on finding new waters, expanding our muskie fishing opportunities in the state. As a bit of a pivot, this new plan, it's going to extend for a 15-year run. It's a 15-year vision, and that really shifts our focus to the existing waters that we have. We conducted a significant public outreach effort in the spring of 2024 to really try to wrap our heads around what did our muskie anglers, what did our anglers in general see for a vision of muskie angling moving forward and muskie management. And so again, this is a bit of a pivot from what we had in the past. Again, the previous plan being focused on looking for new waters. And this plan really is focused on trying to move the needle, improve and or preserve the muskie fishing that we have on our existing waters.
So let's talk a little bit about natural history of muskies. They're a native fish here in Minnesota. Way back, we used to stock what was called, was it the Shupak strain of muskies? I believe they came from the Shupak Lake on the Cabotogam Peninsula. Somewhere, what, it was in the 70s, 80s, we switched to the Leech Lake strain.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the Shupak strain was kind of our original effort in many lakes, and they're still around. We still have some lingering populations. They don't quite grow to the trophy size that anglers are really looking for in muskies. And so that was something, as you note, that the state moved away from. There was also a little bit of dabbling in the Wisconsin strain. But yes, as you noted, we did settle on our current strain, which is out of Leech Lake. And they do tend to grow to a larger size, which is desired by our muskie anglers.
I believe even Wisconsin, they stock the Leech Lake strain now for that same reason, right? Because everybody likes how big they grow.
Yeah, absolutely. The Leech Lake strain has been a success.
Now, we also stock some tiger muskies out there. Explain to listeners what a tiger muskie is and which water bodies we choose to stock them in. Well, why are some lakes kind of made to order for tigers?
Our tiger muskie management and program is centered in the metro. And this plan also touches on that management. And really, this new muskie plan solidifies our commitment to continuing to manage those hybrid muskies in those lakes where it has been successful in the past.
Why don't we just stock Leech Lake strain fish in the metro? What makes a water body compatible with tigers?
Yeah, I think it's a unique opportunity. Those fish can be at least considered a little bit more readily willing to bite. And again, it's a unique opportunity. They may not grow quite as big as our pure strain muskies, but it is an opportunity for us to provide something different in the metro. Some of these maybe smaller waters that we may not stock, again, pure strain muskies, smaller water bodies that maybe can't handle fishing pressure.
They're across with a northern pike, correct? Do they grow a little faster than a pure strain muskie?
Correct, Rob. Yep, nailed it there. Absolutely.
How many lakes do we stock with muskies, either the pure strain or tiger muskies in Minnesota? Do you know that number off the top of your head, Leslie?
102, okay. Right in there, just over 100 lakes that have muskies across the state. That is approximately half, a little less than half, are stocked. I believe the number is 48 for stocked water bodies.
And, I mean, there might be some people listening out there who don't know a lot about muskies who say, we got 10,000 lakes. Now, obviously, we only manage for a couple thousand, I think. There's a lot of lakes where we don't have fisheries management plans on. But they might say, muskies, great big sport fish, a lot of fun to catch. Why don't we stock more lakes with muskies and provide folks with that opportunity to catch them?
As mentioned, that was really the focus of the previous plan, was expanding those opportunities a little bit. But recognizing that we now have these water bodies across the landscape, across the state, we also have limited resources. So we want to make sure that we are focusing our resources appropriately, efficiently, effectively, and where anglers want to see those resources directed. So at some point, you kind of got to put a fence around what you have and, again, try to focus on what we currently have in that sandbox.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline here. We're chatting with Leslie George, Northeast Regional Fisheries Manager for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. She's out of Grand Rapids. We're talking about the state's new muskie plan that it unveiled earlier this spring. Leslie, so you were kind of the point person on this process, right? How did you end up with that responsibility? A personal interest in muskies? How does that work?
Well, we have a wide range of species work groups. And each are, a manager has the opportunity to work with one. And when I was so fortunate to get this regional manager committee or position, I should say, when I was fortunate enough to get this regional manager position, with that came working with our Esocid work group, one of our many species work groups that's combined northern and musky interests. And along with that comes things like long range plans, and other related interests. So to some degree, it came with the position. But again, it has been an outstanding opportunity, and it was a great experience, and it was a great opportunity to get to know our muskie anglers much better than I did. Yeah, much better.
Okay, so the overall plan is not necessarily to create new muskie lakes, but improve the existing muskie populations we have out there. How are we going to do that? Is stocking and stocking protocol going to change? Can you explain what's going to look different with that planning?
So we have always in this state strove to have high quality muskie angling opportunities. And really what this plan does is it just kind of shifts how we want to go about that, or how we think we should attempt to move the needle on our existing fisheries. So that being said, for example, when we had a large scoping survey at the beginning of this planning effort, reaching out to anglers, we had over 4,000 responses to a survey, trying to wrap our heads around where this plan should go. It's an outstanding response rate, or I should say number of responses. So what we heard, as one example, is that the muskie populations, the muskie fisheries in Mille Lacs, Vermilion, and Lake Minnetonka are very critical, meaning essentially that the success of those three fisheries really takes the pressure off of our other fisheries, both socially and physically. When those lakes are doing well, they're vast waters. They have great populations, a lot of space physically. When those waters are doing well, our muskie anglers are pretty happy. When those waters are maybe perceived to be not as good, anglers will go find other waters, which puts more pressure on our smaller fisheries. So again, going back to the public input up front, one thing that we heard loud and clear from our responses is that focusing on Mille Lacs, Vermilion, and Minnetonka should be a priority.
It's worth pointing out that, yeah, I mentioned that, you know, relatively few lakes in the state have muskies, but when you look at total surface area, total fishable water out there, it's like over 20% of our water has muskies in it. So that's definitely a much bigger percentage. Will stocking protocol change? Are you going to stock at a different time of year, or stock different size muskies as a result of this new plan, Leslie?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question, and thank you for it, Rob. One of the big strategies as people take a look at this plan is to shift our focus. When we rear muskies in this state, to this point, we've really been focused on numbers of fingerlings. And this plan really calls for us to change our perspective and start looking at the quality of fish that we're stocking. There's been more and more research in recent years, both in Minnesota and surrounding states, that bigger is better when it comes to stocking muskies, as far as that odds of survival and recruitment, both to our survey nets and the end of that angler's hook. So really what this plan calls for is, again, a shift in our production perspective. There's still a place for fingerlings, please don't get me wrong. But again, starting to shift more of our production and more of our stocking plans to yearling fish, which should have a significantly higher rate of survival than the fingerlings we're stocking into many systems now.
Well, that's a really tangible change. I'm sure the muskie guys are very excited about that. So that's good stuff, Leslie. Hey, any backlash to the plan? I mean, we hear grumbling now and then from walleye guys. Yeah, you know, the muskies are eating all the walleyes or the other sport fish. Hey, did you get much grumbling from non-muskie anglers about the plan?
So, you know, I'm going to give credit, I think, honestly, to the public input efforts and the outreach and awareness efforts that both DNR staff and our involved stakeholders in the Assasid work group and other passionate muskie anglers put in on the front end of this. We did a lot of work to try to understand what this plan should look like moving forward. So after all of that effort, putting pen to paper, having more conversations to shape that vision, when we actually released the plan publicly for public review and public input, the amount of agreement and satisfaction with what we had in the plan's content was amazing.
That's certainly been my impression. I haven't seen any backlash to it at all, Leslie. So nice job, all the due diligence that went into it. If folks want to read the complete plan, go to mndnr.gov and search muskellunge. There's a whole muskie page there, and very near front and center at the top is the long range plan. Folks can click it and read it to their heart's content if they want to get all the details. But for now, Leslie, thanks so much for joining me for a segment and breaking it down and providing some thorough answers to our 20,000 foot questions on the new muskie plan.
I appreciate the time, Rob. Thanks for asking.
That was Leslie George from Minnesota DNR Fisheries talking about the new DNR Long Range Muskie Plan the agency just unveiled. The plan runs till 2040, so it's definitely a long-range plan. Stick around, more Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring wetlands for nearly 90 years. From breeding grounds and migration routes to wintering areas across North America, we need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone. DU volunteers are the engine that raises the funds to make conservation happen, selling tickets, securing donations, and finding sponsors. If you've got the passion, we've got a role for you. Visit ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Great weather means it's time for kids to go out and play. But kids aren't the only ones outdoors. Ticks that spread Lyme disease and other infections are also active in the spring and summer. CDC reminds you and your children to wear insect repellent, bathe or shower as soon as possible after coming indoors, and check for ticks daily. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop fever, rash, or fatigue, seek medical care. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreisline. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you like what we talk about on this program every week. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our weekly print or digital versions, daily digital versions. We update the website every day. Would love to have you on board with a print or digital subscription. I want to transition now and talk a little bit about something I think a lot of people dabble in this time of year, and that's outdoor photography, wildlife photography. And I've got a guest who's joining me now who's never been on the broadcast before. I've been monitoring his photography a little bit. He also just spoke at the Professional Outdoor Media Association convention that happened to be here north of the Twin Cities this past week. He spoke to some of its members about outdoor photography. His name is Seth Owens. He actually hails from Bismarck, North Dakota, and his day job is with Pheasants Forever. He's an education and outreach coordinator out there for North Dakota Pheasants Forever. Seth, good to see you. Thanks for joining me for a segment.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk the camera and talk nature and conservation photography.
Let's talk about your background a little bit, Seth. How did you get into outdoor photography? And you've got a great little website, StuffSethSees.com. It's a clever title, StuffSethSees.com. And use the same handle for your Instagram. That's a great way for folks to see what you're up to photography-wise.
Yeah, so my background is in biology. I have a biology and an English degree from University of North Dakota. And while I was doing field tech work, I was like, gosh, I really should be taking pictures of this. So in 2021, I've only been running the camera for about 5 years, but in 2021, I picked up my first little cheap DSLR off Facebook Marketplace. And that was a very slippery slope from that couple hundred dollar purchase on Marketplace. I mean, it's moved up and I've upgraded gear and now I've traveled all over the world. I just got back from a trip to Alaska photographing ptarmigan.
So Seth, it seems like you have an affinity for birds. Is that correct? Waterfowl and grouse? Is that mostly what you find yourself chasing around North America?
Yeah, mostly grouse, actually. So when we went up to Alaska, the whole goal was to photograph rock and willow ptarmigan, which is a species of mountain or tundra grouse, I guess you'd say. I've always been into birds, and then the whole bird photography aspect of things have only elevated that.
Did you encounter any big mammals while you were up there in Alaska? Lord knows there's some big moose and toothy bears kicking around.
We ran into a pile of moose just even on the roads. They're everywhere. We had them pretty much in the backyard and the Airbnbs we were staying in. We looked for bears, and maybe that was the problem, is we were looking. We didn't see any of them. We were hiking a trail and heard somebody just on the trail next to us shout that there was a bear and two, or a sow grizzly and two cubs. Ooh. And it was like, well, maybe it's good that we didn't run into that one.
Well, let's talk about tips for folks out there listening who are dabbling in photography. And I have to admit, I mean, for years, I ran around with my big, heavy SLR for outdoor news, taking pictures, grip and grins, that sort of thing. And I don't do it anymore because I got an iPhone, a fairly new iPhone, and the cameras on these phones have improved remarkably over the years. I think a lot of people out there are listening, and that's how they take their pictures these days. You can get great pictures just with your phone.
Yeah, I mean, modern phones, especially like the modern Samsungs or modern iPhones, I've got an iPhone, are plenty capable for certain styles of photography. Obviously, you're not going to be getting those Nat Geo tight portraits of animals far away with your phone. But for shooting photos in the field, especially as spring comes through, whether it's, well, I guess, in the fall, chasing a bird dog with a shotgun, or walking through in the spring and seeing flowers and things returning and let the landscape come back to life, your phone is a very capable tool. New phones usually have a wider, or if they have two lenses, it's usually a wider angle lens and then a more narrow lens. Having the opportunity to shoot with those two is fantastic because it's a item we all have in our pockets anyway, and it's a very capable tool for photography.
Just the capability of all these tools on these iPhone camera apps is almost overwhelming. Are there any that you find yourself using a lot, or how would you, you know, any tips for someone like me, or in terms of how to approach and learn how to use just their camera app?
For sure. So there's a handful of different apps that you can get that will kind of improve the capability of the camera on your phone. The default camera app sometimes takes the wheel a little bit too strong. It's got a computer in there that's going to try to do things for you and just kind of like read the situation. And here's what I think you should have. So when it's running on autopilot, it's usually just fine, but sometimes it's limiting because you want to control a certain aspect of the picture, whether you want a longer exposure, so basically your shutter would be open for longer, or maybe you want something different than having the camera. The default app won't always let you do that. Blackmagic Camera, Pro Camera, and then there's a few other ones. Pretty much any app, any dedicated app from the App Store or the Google Play Store that's going to allow you to have more control over the camera is going to be a fantastic tool just to even learn how those cameras work. Learning how shutter and ISO and aperture and all those different parts of it affect an image is not only going to help you take better pictures, but it's going to make that transition into a dedicated mirrorless or DSLR camera, if you decide to make the jump, a little bit easier because you already know how cameras operate.
I haven't acquired any of those apps that you're talking about. Do you have to pay for them? Or either way, even if you do have to pay for them, they access the camera on the phone just like the installed camera app does.
Yep. And then some of them will let you put in like certain like filters or little changes in your brightness and white balance and all sorts of stuff while you're doing it. So they're a good way to learn. A lot of them are free. Sometimes they have paid features or whatever, but honestly, even just being able to manipulate the shutter speed, which is probably one of the most important things for wildlife in nature. If you have a slow shutter speed, you're going to let in more light. So if you want to get a really nice dark sky, you want a slower shutter speed. But if you're trying to capture something moving, whether it's moving because it's an animal or moving because it's blowing in the wind, you're going to want a faster shutter speed just to freeze that motion. And having a tool that'll let you manually set what those are is super, super handy when you're in the field.
You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob at Jerisline. We are chatting with Seth Owens. He's out of Bismarck, North Dakota. He is the education and outreach coordinator for Pheasants Forever in that state. He's also a pretty serious photographer. You can check out some of his work at StuffSethSees.com. He's also on Instagram with that same handle. Seth, so this past week you got together with the Professional Outdoor Media Association folks to give them some tips on photography. How did you approach that group, a more experienced group with cameras? Do you find a lot of even so-called professional photographers these days are using their phone cameras, or are they using SLRs? So tell us about, you know, what you presented to those guys.
So a lot of the professional photographers are using dedicated cameras just because you have the opportunity to put on more lenses and do things like that. But there's also, like we've talked about, there's plenty capable pictures and plenty capable photographers just using your phone. And with that in mind, I didn't really get too crazy much into the weeds of technology. A big thing we talked about was reading the setting and composition, and then a little bit of editing and stuff like that. But a big point that I try to hammer home is talking about like the ethics of nature and hunt or conservation photography. So we talked a lot about the ethics of that. So the ethics of conservation or nature photography, wildlife photography, it's pretty common sense. It's like, if you want to capture the best behavior, you want to not have a big presence on the landscape. So whether you're photographing grouse, which I love to do, I'm not standing out there in the field hoping the birds come back, because that's not how it's going to happen. I'm using camouflage or a ghillie suit, but often I'm using a pop-up blind to photograph those birds. So they don't know that I'm there. I get to capture nature as it actually is. Leaving no trace principles, the same as camping. On the hunting side, because we talked about both nature, wildlife conservation photography, and hunting and fishing photography, I'm not a big fan of the grip and grin for like showing success on a hunt. I don't think that it tells the story well enough. And I think that it's can be an unappealing image that you show to people that are against hunters or that are agnostic to hunting and fishing itself. Especially if you have like you're holding the horns on a deer and you have a tongue hanging out and it's bloody and it's a mess, that doesn't exactly put hunting in the best light. So one thing that I always talk about is showing the success or the failure of a hunt without glorifying blood and gore. So talking about telling the story through the pictures and not just a dead animal at the end of the day. Take pictures of the people, of the scene, of the small details that we all see. I really like taking pictures of feathers when I hunt birds. So like the wing feathers on a mallard or the curl feathers on a mallard or the nice colors on a rooster pheasant or the intricacy details of a sharp-tailed grouse, like back, those patterns that it has, showing the success that a hunter or the hunting community would know. So the hunters know this is a sign of success. But to the other people that might not be into hunting or might be disagreeable or might not even care, it's something just very pretty to look at. It's an appealing image regardless of the context. And really, the nice thing about ethics and morals for photography is everybody gets to set their own. My goal wasn't to tell people what's right or wrong. I'm hoping people disagree with me because it would be unfortunate if everybody's like, oh, this guy's right, and then nobody ever did anything else. Be aware of what you're sharing and be aware of what story you're telling through the pictures you take.
Now, that's some excellent advice, and I like your focus on ethics. I mean, photography has never been more accessible than it is right now. Everybody's got a remarkably high quality camera in their pocket. And that's why everyone's shooting video and shooting photographs. But I like your kind of less is more approach where, you know, think about how you're composing photos before you just automatically snap away. It's not like when I was coming up and you had to buy a ton of film, and we were a little more careful about when we pulled the trigger on a photo because film and developing costs were way more expensive than what it costs now to have access to an image. Great stuff, Seth. Thank you for spending a segment with me. If folks want to learn more, they can go to your website, StuffSethSees.com, and you've got a link there for photo workshops and a lot of your photography. Any final thoughts before we let you go on your website or other matters?
Yeah, join. I mean, I work for Pheasants Forever. You can get in touch with me through my email, sowens@pheasantsforever.org. I'm happy to talk birds. I'm happy to talk landscape. I'm happy to talk whatever. Spring's a fantastic time to be out on the prairies. Go out, and I end every one of my social media posts with go get lost. And I mean it. The best way to capture images and tell your story is to go wander and get a little bit lost out on the landscape.
Perfect. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
That was Seth Owens. His day job is with Pheasants Forever, but you can see what he's all about at StuffSethSees.com. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species. Filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points. All before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister are going to wrap up this week's broadcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you like the content here, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you want to subscribe, or you, again, can do that at OutdoorNews.com. Tim, we talked some Boundary Waters topics earlier in the show. I got a couple more that I wanted to bring up with you. One, I want to congratulate my friend Matt Schultz. Matt was the program director at Sportsman for the Boundary Waters. I got to know him very well. He was in D.C., just, man, slogging it out, battling to try to prevent that Senate vote late April, early May. He's worked very hard on behalf of the Boundary Waters. Unfortunately, they lost that vote. But he is grabbing what I would call a dream job: fly fishing travel specialist with Orvis. I was like, really, Matt? That's a real job title? So I just want to say congratulations to Matt here on Outdoor News Radio.
That's a job that every guy that fly fishes would want right there, let me tell you. This guy lives up in Ely. He's getting married here soon. As you said, he's a incredible individual that's worked real hard for the outdoors. And everything seems to be falling into place real nicely for this guy. More power to you, buddy.
Yeah, congratulations to Matt. And like you say, he's getting married to Claire Sebald this weekend. So, wow, some big life changes for young Matt. Another Boundary Water story I had in this week's paper, Mark Newsel. You know, Mark, Tim, you guys are kind of contemporaries, about the same age, I think. Mark has done some outdoors writing. He's a journalism professor emeritus now at the University of St. Thomas. Mark wrote a piece. He's a big Boundary Waters guy, spent a lot of time up there, spends, I don't know, 15, 20 days a year. He wrote a story about the smallmouth bass in the Boundary Waters. And I actually had Mark on the show last week. We talked about it, but we ran the story this week, and I don't think you and I talked about it. Smallmouth, not native to the B-dub, and a really cool photo that I tracked down to the Wisconsin Historical Society of Sigurd Olson, that legend of conservation, out there stocking an exotic species, smallmouth bass, in the Boundary Waters canoe area, what's now the BWCA. It wasn't officially wilderness back then in the 40s, I think, when he was stocking those fish.
Yeah, and they wanted to increase tourism. They thought, let's put a fish in the water that's easy to catch. Back then it was walleyes, northern pike, sturgeon, lake trout. Pike, always fun to catch, but smallmouth bass, they just threw them in there by the ton. How did that affect other populations of fish? Negatively, of course, as they all compete for food. Things have balanced out, I believe, up in the Boundary Waters. And, man, you can go up there and catch some monster smallmouth bass, one of the best bass fisheries. When you get into certain areas in, like, Crooked Lake, oh, my gosh. I think they would have got in there eventually anyway. They were stocking them hard in the Rainy River, as the story told. But Sigurd definitely decided it would be good to put him in there. And really, personally, I'm glad he did.
All right. Yeah, you know, he was an outfitter himself. He had incentive to try to bring folks up there and catch fish. But, I mean, I think to a lot of folks, smallmouth bass are the signature Boundary water species, like moose and eagles and loons. And, hey, 100 years ago, you probably wouldn't have caught one there. But anyway,
isn't that amazing? They were not native to that area. Now right. They just flourish.
Right, absolutely. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisian with Tim Lesmeister. We are bringing home this week's broadcast. A couple other quick stories we should get to, Tim. The corner crossing thing is erupting out west again. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers has been all over this. The guys at Meat Eater are posting and writing about it. BHA is suing the state of Montana because Montana back in January declared corner crossings not legal here in Minnesota, even though it sounded like for years or decades, they told the conservation officers, wardens out in that state to, you know, don't ticket guys for corner crossing. Well, the G and Fort administration out there, they've decided that they don't want corner crossing to occur. So BHA tried to negotiate with them, and then the administration wouldn't relent. And so BHA is suing. You know, this was reconciled in six states under the 10th Circuit. That does not include Montana. A lot of Minnesotans and Wisconsinites go out there and hunt for big game in Montana. There's close to 900,000 acres that's landlocked via corner crossing that is now off limits. That's a big chunk of public land. I guess we got to figure this out nationwide, huh?
Yeah, I think that this is something that we need to have a ruling on that doesn't just encompass a few states. Because that 10th Circuit only had Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Utah, and Wyoming basically saying it's okay to corner cross there. But what about Montana? Montana now says, no, we won't let you do that. So I'm thinking that this could be a good court case because maybe it will set a precedent and that we'll see, you know, all of the states in the country allow corner crossing. I mean, what difference does it make? The ruling, the 10th Circuit rule, basically, as long as you can get to a piece of property from public land to public land without touching private property, you're fine. Why don't they allow that in Montana? It does not make any sense.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined to review the 10th Circuit case that affected those six states you just mentioned. I got a feeling that if this erupts and moves up through Montana, the Supreme Court will not ignore it again. Clearly, we've got Republican administrations who want to permanently ban corner crossing. And I just think if this gets to the Supreme Court again, Tim, I don't like our odds. I don't know. That's just a gut feeling. I don't blame BHA for pushing the envelope and insisting that that Montana unlock these properties. This is a lot of public land.
Well, I'm thinking because the Supreme Court last time decided they did not want to hear this case, that maybe they kind of are in favor of this because they allowed that 10th Circuit, which allowed corner crossing in those states to stay. So maybe they just, maybe if this does get up to the Supreme Court through a Montana lawsuit, well, maybe it will fall into the favor of those that want to corner cross. I hope so.
I'd love to think you're right. I tend to think it was more the Supreme Court just decided to ignore this one and hopes it goes away. It's not. And I just feel like Republican operatives out there are saying, we don't want this. And the Supreme Court's been very sympathetic to Republican policies the past, well, for a while, but certainly since Trump was reelected. And I just think if it goes there again, I don't know that they'll ignore it the second time around. I hope I'm wrong. Tim, finally, a story out of Nebraska, one from the You Can't Make It Up file. You sent this one to me. Guns don't shoot people, dogs do. Tim, I guess, is the moral of this one. We got a dog in a parked truck accidentally shot a woman in Nebraska last weekend. I'll let you just go off on this, Tim. Go ahead.
They had a loaded shotgun in the car, in the back seat with the dog. The dog pulled the trigger more than once and literally shot someone that was not in the car. The shots went through that vehicle and shot someone that was actually at an intersection. So some good, strong loads. And
I mean, that's terrible. That's just so terrible. Yeah,
it's horrible. I mean, after reading that article, I went in and did a Google check. And this is not as uncommon as you'd think. Dogs set off firearms because people are not treating that firearm the way they should, cautiously. And so these dogs set off these firearms and other animals get hurt, people get hurt. And so you have to be, you know, much more careful than you are. Keep the gun in a case. Do not have it loaded. And definitely make sure that a loaded firearm, if you're out hunting, is not somewhere that someone can easily set it off, especially a dog. So, but I thought it was quite amazing that someone allowed their dog to shoot somebody else.
Yeah, this is Dateline Scott's Bluff, far western Nebraska. I spent some time out there once. We're being a little flippant about this. Someone was shot, but not life-threatening, so we're glad no one didn't lose their life over this situation. The story says, local police are reminding the public that it is illegal in Nebraska to travel with a loaded shotgun in a vehicle. Well, yeah, okay, great. It's also incredibly stupid, and it violates some really basic, simple tenets of firearm safety that everyone seems to be forgetting. You know, we're the gun country. Everybody wants a gun all the time. You still have to abide by basic firearm safety rules. The first and most important is not to point a gun at anybody, whether it's loaded or unloaded. The second is you always keep a loaded gun under control. And hunters are guilty of this too sometimes. I recounted an anecdote to you off air, Tim. I know a guy who said he was hunting with a big group. Someone put the shotgun, loaded shotgun, down on the ground. A dog came running through. They were bird hunting. The dog stepped on the safety. So the safety was on. You know, they go, whoa, the safety was on. Doesn't matter. Safeties can fail. And the dog stepped on the safety with one with its foot, and then its toe came down and hit the trigger and shot another dog. That's why you always keep a loaded firearm under control. And you don't keep and you unload away from the vehicles too. There's so many ways that anecdote is also illustrates poor firearm safety habits. But driving around with a loaded shotgun that's not under control, that a dog or a child or anybody could accidentally trip, is just completely unacceptable.
And there's no hunting seasons open that I know of except for maybe turkey.
Per the stories that I'm seeing, it's illegal to drive around with a loaded shotgun. So I sure hope this person got ticketed for multiple violations.
Yeah.
And I just, year round, all the time, you got to abide by good firearm safety. All right. Well, Tim, we are out of time. I hope you have a good week ahead. We'll talk to you in 7 days.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
That was our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him and our other guests. I hope everybody has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob at Jerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.